So we, yesterday's reading, homework reading, was from the beginning of the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. The first two cantos of introduction, Suta Goswami doesn't appear until the very end of the second canto, so most of it's spoken by discussion between Suta Ugrashvat Suta and the sages headed by Shonaka. And then Suta Goswami is the narrator for most of the second canto, although we hear the history of Srimad Bhagavatam going back to the very first recital of the four-verse abridged version of the Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Narayan himself to Brahma. Then Brahma speaks his version of the Bhagavatam to Narada in a few hundred verses. Consist of three chapters of the second canto. At the very end of the second canto, apparently out of nowhere, sudden change of topic, Parikshit asks to hear what was discussed between Vidura and Maitreya at Hardwar, actually, was the place where it was spoken. So, this is the style of the Bhagavatam. This is the method of the transmission of spiritual knowledge that the Bhagavatam follows. A person who is extremely qualified speaker is approached by a person who is a very extremely qualified hearer. And a conversation is begun by the submission of very intelligent questions. Questions and answers. This is actually the standard Bhagavat process of receiving knowledge, receiving Krishna's mercy, and becoming attracted to Krishna. This is, as far as I understand, this is the real lesson that Bhagavatam is trying to teach us, how to be attracted to Krishna. Everything else is details. Now, we may have to memorize certain facts to pass the Bhakti Shastri test, but the real test is how you become attracted to Krishna. And the standard method to receive this transcendental knowledge that leads to this transcendental attraction is asking questions and getting answers, but in the proper way. It's not some mystic process of osmosis or what they call Shaktipat. Guru touches you on the forehead and there's a lightning bolt and he loses all the Shakti and you get it. No, it's a standard process of communication. Krishna describes in the Gita, Tadvidi pranipatena paripushnena sevaya. There's a protocol. Just like in telephone communication. You hear the ring, but you don't know who's on the other side. And the person who's calling you isn't sure whether he's got through to the right number. So there's a protocol. The person who is answering the phone says hello. And the person who made the call announces who he is. Not the other way around, that you pick up you pick up the phone and say hello, and the person who's calling says, "Who are you?" This happens in India a lot. This is rude. This is breaking the protocol. I called you, I should tell you who I am and what my business is, why I'm bothering you. Similarly, there's a standard protocol for establishing spiritual communication. This is Bhagavat communication. And it's described in Bhagavad Gita. You approach the learned person, the person who is Tattvadarshi. And first of all, you submit yourself. Pranipatena. So bowing down is not just some etiquette, or in Bengal it's a way of manipulating people. Bow down and beg in order to get what you want. No, this is a standard protocol procedure for initiating a proper spiritual communication. You want to acknowledge that the person you're approaching knows more than you. That as far as knowledge goes, you're my superior and I'm approaching you as a student. Therefore, pranipatena, you bow down. You tell them, you know more than me, you're my superior, I want some serious transmission of knowledge. First step, second step, Pati Prashna. You don't assume that everything will go on by mental telepathy. You announce, you inform the teacher what your inquiry is, what your problems are. It's like you approach a doctor. You have to wait in his office for an hour to get to see him. And then you don't, you know, your wife made you go, so you don't really want to admit you're sick. And you meet the doctor, and he says, "Oh, how are you, Mr. Jones? How are you doing today? What's your problem?" And you tell the doctor, "No problem, I just wanted to say hello." Waste of time. You're wasting your doctor's time, wasting your own time. When you go to the doctor's office, you have to tell him what your symptoms are. He's a busy man, he doesn't have time to fool around. Similarly, the second step in initiating spiritual communication is Pati Prashna. The student has, his responsibility to submit questions and to, you know, inform the teacher what he wants to know about. And then sevaya. Because the questions may take various forms, but it usually amounts to, why am I not serving Krishna? Why am I an illusion? And the answer is usually, you should be serving Krishna. No matter what the symptoms of the disease are, it's really all the same disease. We're not serving Krishna. We've forgotten Krishna. So, no matter what form it takes, the answer is going to be basically, you should re-engage yourself in Krishna's service. Therefore, the third step is always engage in service. The third step of establishing the communication. So this is, in the Bhagavatam, there are so many such communications going on, multi-level. First we have Parikshit and Shukadev talking, and then after them, there's Sutta and the sages at Naimisharanya. And we hear from Shukadev at the end of this, or Parikshit asks at the end of the second canto, let's hear about, please, this previous conversation on the topics of the Bhagavatam. A lot of the questions I'm asking you were already discussed between Vidura and Maitreya, so can you just tell me what they spoke about? And that's the answers that Shukadev gives, the retelling of the conversations between Vidura and Maitreya form two whole cantos, third and fourth cantos of the Bhagavatam. So here we're at the very beginning of the third canto. We're given the history of how the two got together, how it was that Vidura approached Maitreya to hear the Bhagavatam. Because Vidura, first of all, encountered Uddhava. And we read about this in the first three chapters of the third canto. And then Uddhava redirected him. We'll find out, we'll discuss why. He sent him to Maitreya. It's an interesting contrast, these two people. Two great devotees. Similar, but very distinct, very special differences between the two of them. Vidura and Maitreya. They're all, both of them now older men. They're both famous for being great advisors. Uddhava was Krishna's advisor. In Dwarka, Krishna practically would never do anything important, any important act of state, without consulting with Uddhava. And similarly, Vidura was the guide and advisor of the Pandavas, and he was the advisor for King Dhritarashtra in the Kuru court. Yanmantrinam vaidurakam jananti. There's a great, people who know about diplomacy, they prize especially the advice given by Vidura. He's famous for expert political advice. Therefore, very acute, sharp advice. It's called Vaidurakam, like the instructions, like the advice given by Vidura. That's the sameness, but there is some specific difference. Uddhava in Dwarka was practically inseparable from Krishna. not only was he his minister, his advisor, but he was Krishna's close friend, companion. He was with Krishna constantly, more than anybody else in Dwarka, except for maybe Balaram and Krishna's queens. So his, although he's basically in the mood of servitude, it's very much mixed with friendship. On the other hand, and he was a little younger than Krishna, whereas Vidura, he didn't have so much of Krishna's direct association. He was living in Hastinapur and later in Indraprastha with the Pandavas. Or he was mostly staying in Hastinapur. And he saw Krishna, and he had intimate association of Krishna's devotees, but it was a more distant relationship. And he's older than Krishna, so there's some differences there. But it's curious that in the end, the two of them got together, Vidura and Uddhava, in a way very similar persons. So the description at the very beginning of the third canto, you should have already read the verses last night, that, of course, the history given, it's explained a little later in the third canto, that Vidura, at one point, before the Battle of Kurukshetra, warned, one gave a final warning to Dhritarashtra, you have to get rid of your son. The dynasty is going to be destroyed because of his nonsense. The only hope is to eject your son. Get him out of here. And Duryodhan, hearing this, was furious and demanded that instead Vidura be kicked out of the palace. So before anything could be done to kick him out, he simply voluntarily left and went on pilgrimage. So, in the course of his pilgrimage, he traveled around India, south, northeast, and now he's coming back to the west. And states how he traveled to the provinces of Surat, Sauvira, Matsya, Kuru Jangala, and then he came to Vrindavan, the place where Vidura and Uddhava met was in Vrindavan, very near Vamshivata, where Krishna called the gopis for the rasa dance on the shore of the Jamuna. Just around the corner from that is Gyanagudri, the place where Vidura later met with Uddhava, just by accident. So how did they meet? Vidura is older than Uddhava, so therefore the proper thing is for him to treat Uddhava like a son. So the greeting was like that, in that mood.
Does that mean that Uddhava was there in Vrindavan delivering the letter to the gopis? Because Krishna sent him to Vrindavan.
Uddhava? No, that was earlier. Because that was when Krishna when Krishna was in Mathura. He was actually on his way to Bhadrakashram on Krishna's order. We read yesterday how Krishna ordered him to go back. So, it's on the way. If you're going from Dwarka to Bhadrakashram, you have to go east, northeast. So he maybe intentionally did that, but it's not very much out of the way. If you're going from Gujarat up to Bhadrakashram. I mean, you head from, if you're going from Vrindavan to Bhadrakashram, you go to Meerut, and then a bit north, and you head north up, and you eventually hit Bhadrakashram. It's about a three-day trip by car. A month if you're walking. So it's natural to go first, to go through Mathura district on the way from Dwarka to Bhadrakashram. They just happened to meet. They happened to both be there, accidentally at the same time. Vidura was just on his pilgrimage all over India, and he just happened to come there.
Vidura didn't know that Krishna had departed.
He did. They both knew. They both knew about it. There, Vidura. We'll see that Vidura is going to ask Uddhava about the family members as if they were still alive. But he knew that they had passed away. He just couldn't admit it. He couldn't come out and say it. They both knew. Uddhava was in Dwarka just before it happened. You know, he was with Krishna at the time it happened in Prabhas. And Vidura was not far away either. He heard it. He heard the news. So first of all, proper greetings. The elder has to greet the younger man, even though they're both elderly men, but the one who's older than the other Vidura treated Uddhava like a son, embraced him. And then Vidura asked, because Uddhava had recently come from Dwarka, so Vidura asked, how are the family members doing? Even though he knew what had happened, that they most of them were dead now, had left this world. Prabhupada says in the purport, this inquiry appears to be very queer, you know, since he knew they weren't around anymore. But Srila Jiva Goswami states that the news was shocking to Vidura, who therefore inquired again due to great curiosity. Thus his inquiry was psychological and not practical. Not the most important thing in such an interaction is the proper sentiment, dealing with the other person properly, being considerate of his feelings, rather than here's a person, I can pump him for some information or manipulate him for some purpose. This is not a transcendental person to meet one another. Their concern is the happiness of the other, the well-being of the other, not how they can use this other person. Okay. And then after, I didn't bother to give all the questions that, yes, I'm sorry.
Vidura asked Uddhava this question. Is this a breach of etiquette?
No, it's actually the proper thing to do. Yeah, and the elder speaks first. Yeah, and also because Uddhava had been in Dwarka recently, so he's the one who would have recent news.
But then, how would it?
Yes.
In response, he became very emotional.
Uddhava.
And so, provoking that emotion is that's been not a breach, but is it somewhat provocative to ask such a question?
You know, they're both in shock. So, yeah, as Prabhupada mentioned in the prayer, not much they can do to ameliorate the situation. The most horrible thing that could possibly happen, Krishna has left the world and all his devotees have left with him, has just happened. So, not much you could do to make that situation pleasant. You know, by saying things in a certain way, it's a disaster no matter how they deal with it. They can barely control themselves. They're in shock. So they're trying to be polite, maintain the normal social etiquette. But it's difficult in this situation. But we'll see that it's not just all misery here. If this is what spiritual life is like, one disaster after another, and you get attached to Krishna and then he leaves you, and you burn in torment for the rest of your life, what's the use of that? Who wants such spiritual life? But it's not what it seems to be. This misery, this torment of separation is actually the highest spiritual ecstasy. It's deceptive. And we're going to see, when Uddhava starts answering, we're going to read his answers now, that almost everything he says cannot be taken literally on face value. We'll see that things aren't the way literally that he's describing it, and what looks like misery, what's being described as misery, is actually the highest ecstasy. This is the mystery of devotional service and separation, which is actually the highest variety of devotional service. This is highlighting Uddhava's greatness, also Vidura's, that they're privileged to be experiencing this extreme of ecstasy. Just like the gopis in Vrindavan, when they were deprived of Krishna's association, they became as if insane. Divyondamata. Yeah, it seems like your rational mental processes just break down. So practically, this is, we'll see that in the discussion, especially what Uddhava says, most of it doesn't stand up to logic or the real facts. He's speaking like a mad person, actually. And we'll see in a minute. So after about 20 verses of inquiries about the family, then I jump to verse 45, where Vidura tells Uddhava, "Oh, my friend, therefore, chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. He is unborn, yet he appears by his causeless mercy upon the surrendered rulers of all parts of the universe. Only for their interest did he appear in the family of his unalloyed devotees, the Yadus." Like the Yadus. And that brings us to the beginning of the second chapter. Uddhava begins responding, and he manifests the depths of his shock and his feelings of separation from Krishna and his remembrance of Krishna. This is a very deep part of the Bhagavatam, because we don't see much of Krishna. We get a glimpse of Krishna in the first canto, and it's Krishna at the end of his pastimes, after the Battle of Kurukshetra. And he's just there. He rescues Parikshit, and he advises Arjuna how to deal with Ashwatthama. But the next, and we don't hear anything about Krishna in the second canto. And after this discussion between Uddhava and Vidura, we're not going to hear anything about Krishna again until the tenth canto, basically. We'll hear about various incarnations. Over 30 different avatars are described from cantos 3 up to canto 9. But Krishna Lila, Krishna himself, we won't see again until we get to the 10th canto. But here's a glimpse, here's a vivid picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, given by Uddhava in his remembrance of Krishna. At the at the shocking moment of realizing now Krishna is gone, this devotee who was so close to Krishna, now everything's turned around. He never practically spent a minute deprived of Krishna's association. Now he's deprived of Krishna's association for good. So Uddhava speaks. Are told that he couldn't speak at first, that he was in such anxiety. The word is anxiety. All these negative words are used: pain, anxiety, shock, distress. But these are, again, we have to not accept them on face value. If what the devotees, the life of these devotees, is just anxiety and shock and confusion and bewilderment and distress, then it wouldn't be something we'd be interested in sharing. It's not what it seems to be. But anyway, the description is there, that Uddhava was unable to answer due to excessive anxiety, Prabhupada says, at the remembrance of the Lord. First symptom of a great devotee is that if he simply hears the name of the Lord, or even the questions were, how are our family doing? Even anything connected with Krishna, Krishna's family members, anything about him, immediately sparks vivid remembrance. And that's a sign of a pure devotee, of a very advanced devotee, that even the thing distantly connected with Krishna, any hint of udipana, something that sparks the flames of remembrance will send him into ecstasy. And the next verse reminds us that even when he was a little boy, 5 years old, Panchahayanaha, he was so absorbed in thinking about Krishna. He was playing with deity dolls, playing at deity worship. His mother would call him to breakfast, and he refused to come to eat. He was so absorbed in just constant remembrance of Krishna as a child. Prabhupada describes in the purport, he was a natural devotee of Lord Krishna, Nitya Siddha. The fact is, Uddhava is an eternal associate of Krishna. He seems to have gone through a process of sadhana, of purification, of practicing devotional service. He was disciple of Brihaspati. He studied material sciences. He studied astrology and other material sciences from Brihaspati. He was a great politician. It seems that he gradually got into pure devotional service, elevated himself. The fact is, he's an eternal associate. And his having to undergo a sadhana, a purification, a practice, is just another pastime. Just like Narada Muni. We yesterday saw Narada and Uddhava together. Both of them are Nitya Siddha, eternal associates of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. But when they come to this world, both of them go through the motions of becoming elevated from a conditioned state and undergoing sadhana. Narada was born as the son of a maidservant, and after getting the prasad and the mercy and instructions from the Bhaktivedantas who were visiting, he started practicing sadhana bhakti, hearing and chanting, and took him the rest of his life to become perfect. But that's just a pastime. He's an eternal associate. Same thing with Uddhava. If we read about how he practiced devotional service, how he gradually became elevated, that's just his lila. Not everybody who's practicing devotional service can be called a Nitya Siddha devotee, but a Nitya Siddha devotee can very often go through the motions of practicing sadhana bhakti. We read many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when they were living in Navadvipa, before Lord Chaitanya revealed himself to be Krishna, when he was pretending just to be a puffed up scholar as a young man, and then when he started his Sankirtan pastimes, he reclaimed his eternal associates one by one. They joined his movement one by one. And each one of them seemed to have undergone a conversion from materialistic life. They were also proud scholars or ritualistic Brahmins or atheists. And each of them underwent a conversion and then made a choice to join Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. But this is all lila. They're all eternal associates. So same thing with Uddhava. But the fact is, he served Krishna from his very childhood. And the next verse says, even in his old age, that service didn't slacken. And as soon as he was asked about the message of the Lord, he at once remembered all about him. So, at first, just hearing about Krishna's family and about some mention of Krishna himself and realizing that now they have all departed this world. Uddhava was sent into a state of trance, ecstasy, and shock. And for a few minutes his body didn't even move. And he displayed very elevated bhavas, bodily symptoms of ecstasy. This is called sattvika bhavas. The ecstasy is actually in the heart. It's not an external thing. But when we see another devotee in ecstasy, we see in his body external symptoms of his elevated consciousness. These are called sattvika bhavas. Like hair standing on end, and tears flowing from the eyes, and so on, trembling. These themselves are not the ecstasy. These are just things we can see on the outside that show that the ecstasy is there. But experts in the devotional science, the science of rasa, can detect that such and such a person is in an ecstatic condition because he's displaying these genuine symptoms. But, yeah, I'm sorry, you have a comment? You can ask it. The way Prabhupada describes him, he was a jnani, practicing jnana mishra bhakti. So, and he made further advancement by hearing Krishna speak to Uddhava. So he was not yet perfect, Maitreya himself, before he met Krishna at Prabhas. So he wasn't an eternal associate. Maitreya attained his perfection by the sadhana of hearing. Uddhava, however, is an eternal associate. He's just Vidura. He's one of the Mahajans, but he's a demigod, and he doesn't go back to Godhead at the end of Krishna's pastimes. He goes back to his position as Yamaraj, which doesn't prove that he's not perfect. Generally, even if a demigod earns liberation, he still has to serve his term of office. That's described in the Vedanta Sutra, Yavat Adhikara, that you may be Jivan Mukta, you may be liberated, but because you're a responsible demigod, you have to finish up to the end of the Manvantara, serving in your position, and then you can go back to Godhead. So we don't know. We can say that Vidura is perfect, but he's not. He has to go back to his post until his time is up. So not we don't know. I mean, Vidura could be just as perfect as Uddhava, or also up there, a liberated eternal associate of the Lord. Can't say. From the information we have, we can't say what his actual position is. His official position, he's a demigod, and that means he can't leave this universe until he's yes. But that was a matter of etiquette. He could have heard, he wanted to hear. It doesn't mean that he didn't already know. Yeah. Very often, both the student and the teacher are so elevated that either one could be teaching and the other one could, they could switch positions. But because of the etiquette that Uddhava is younger than Vidura, he did not want to be the teacher. He didn't want to speak the Bhagavatam to Vidura, because it's a break of etiquette for the younger man to instruct the older. And Maitreya is older than both of them, so that he was the fit person. And he properly heard what Krishna told Uddhava, so he was competent. It's not a proof that one's better than the other. Even though Vidura is taking the position of student of Maitreya, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's not just as elevated. So normally these transcendental ecstasies of bhava, the symptoms of the love of God, are not something to be cheaply advertised in public. You shouldn't want to make a public spectacle of your ecstasy. It's a very private thing. Especially materialistic people will not understand. They'll get the wrong impression. They'll commit offenses. So pure devotees generally don't display their ecstasies in the general public. Only in the association of other very elevated devotees will they ever show such things. So here we have Vidura and Maitreya in private, the two of them. Uddhava does not feel constrained to hide his ecstasies in front of Vidura. Therefore, he's showing all these symptoms. We have a counterexample. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Ramananda Rai for the first time on the bank of the Godavari. They immediately, were ecstatic at meeting one another. They embraced and started rolling on the, holding onto each other. They started rolling on the ground and shedding torrents of tears. But they were in public. Ramananda Rai is the viceroy. He's going to take his bath in the river. He's accompanied by soldiers and Brahmins chanting mantras and, elephants and, the whole entourage. And these Brahmins are puzzled. Why, Ramananda Rai is the king's representative, but he's a Shudra, he's a Kayasta. So why is this sadhu embracing a Shudra? And they were thinking also just the opposite, that, this is the powerful governor, why is he embracing this penniless beggar? They're thinking both things, that, neither one is fit to embrace the other one. And what are they doing anyway, rolling on the ground like this? So, therefore, Lord Chaitanya sensed this is not appropriate to make, to confuse these people. So he immediately hid his ecstasy, and advised Ramananda, we'll meet later tonight to talk about Krishna. Devotees who are actually advanced don't want to make a cheap public spectacle of their ecstasy. They hide it. Only in a secluded, in the privacy of intimate association can these things be revealed. We're lucky to read about it. Srila Shukadeva Goswami felt it appropriate to record this in the Bhagavatam, even though it was a very private interreaction. So Vidura noticed, and he knew what the symptoms meant, that Uddhava is experiencing this elevated agitation of viraha bhava, of separation from Krishna. It may look like he's miserable, but Uddhava knew what this meant, that this is the highest ecstasy. That Uddhava was privileged for so many years to enjoy eating with Krishna, having Krishna ask his advice, always being with Krishna, Krishna sending him on confidential missions. This is sambhoga. Sambhoga in the mood of servitude. The servant enjoys being used by his master and being in the company of his master. That's sambhoga in the dasya rasa. Such an intimate enjoyment of being with Krishna constantly and always being engaged in his service. But now this is the greater perfection of Uddhava's life. To be left behind by Krishna and to be experiencing this the mood of serving Krishna in separation. This is a step up. This is greater ecstasy. Although it looks like disaster and misery, it's just the opposite. Certainly indication that Uddhava is not just another devotee. So gradually, it's described, he came back to this world. In other words, he started getting back his external consciousness. Shanakaya Bhagaval Lokan Nvilokam Pura Agataha. Gradually came back to this world of mortals from the Lord's transcendental abode. In other words, he came out of his trance, wiped his eyes, and smiled and began to respond to Vidura's questions. Then some very famous verses here. First verse, Vidura says, Krishna dyumani nimloche girnesh ajagarena ha kim nu nak pushalam ruyam gata shvishu griheshvaham. I'll read Prabhupada's translation. Sri Vidura said, My dear Vidura, Sri Uddhava said, My dear Vidura, the sun, S-U-N, of the world, Lord Krishna has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? Prabhupada says in the one of the sentences in the purport, Uddhava was as much aggrieved as Vidura, and there was nothing further to be said about their welfare. Now, at least the way they're talking, this is the worst possible situation. There's nothing much you can do to make it sound good or to find any good, any hope in it. Hopeless situation. But actually, this is the topmost ecstasy. Then he starts talking in contradictory terms. First of all, says that this Yadu dynasty is so unfortunate that Krishna was living with them for years at a time, never left their company, and they didn't appreciate him. They didn't know who he was. So therefore, they're the most unfortunate people. We can take this on face value, but we shouldn't, actually, because it's not a fact that the Yadus were ignorant of Krishna. They weren't materialists. They weren't impersonalists. They would have never have become Krishna's family members unless they were very advanced Vaishnavas, pure devotees, surrendered completely to Krishna and fully aware of who Krishna is. Under the influence of Yogamaya, that knowledge may have become covered over for the purpose of the pastimes. They may have been so absorbed in thinking of Krishna as their family member they forgot he was God. But actually, deep inside, they know who Krishna is. So this is what Uddhava is saying here is not true, that the Yadus are unfortunate because they were ignorant of Krishna, even though he was with them. But that's his ecstasy. He, you know, that's his family. He's feeling actually very unqualified and fallen. Just like the rest of my family, I also had the opportunity to be with Krishna, and I didn't appreciate him, I didn't take advantage of the opportunity. That's his ecstasy, to think like that. Even though it's all wrong, it's not at all true. Yeah, please, go ahead. You mean he's contrasting himself with the rest of the Yadus?
Yeah, he's saying that he's such a close associate, he's always with Krishna, they were inseparable.
Yeah.
Was it possible to see that he was so close, and he was saying that the others weren't as close as him, so in contrast to himself?
I think he lumps himself in one of these later verses. You know, he says, we... I think he considers himself also unfortunate for the same reason. Well, maybe, but we're going to look at the description of the Yadus and how the Yadus glorify Uddhava from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and you'll see that. He's very much in the mood of the Yadavas. He's just the best of the Yadavas. It's not that he's in a whole different, you know, that they're all ignorant of Krishna and he's the only one who knows Krishna. But he knows Krishna. He is a Yadava. They all have very intimate relationships with Krishna. But none of them can be with Krishna all the time the way Uddhava is. Ugra Singh, especially, was complaining that, look, you know, Krishna really cheated me. You know, put me on the throne against my will, and now I can't have an intimate relationship with him. He's always coming to me, and, you know, and treating me like the king, and, you know, and himself behaving like a humble servant. My lord, what can I do for you? You know, and I can't have a decent relationship with him. You know, and I hardly see him. He's always running off someplace. You know, and I'm stuck here, staying on the throne. But Uddhava gets to go with Krishna wherever he goes, be with him day and night. And Krishna treats him like a friend. So they're, you know, they're both Yadus. They both really have an intimate relationship with Krishna. But the other Yadus can see how Uddhava has, you know, a deeper, a special, more intimate, you know, much more intimate relationship. But it's the same kind of relationship. Yes, I'm sorry.
That seems paradoxical, considering that he's known himself as a servant. You know, it's all the opulences rather than the personal concern of the Lord.
Who is you talking about? Uddhava or Uddhava Sen?
But the other saw that Uddhava shared this very intimate relationship with Sri Krishna.
Yes. Because of the opulence?
Because Uddhava worshipped the opulent form, Narayan.
He's worshipping Krishna in Dwarka. And it's not just the opulence. If they were just interested in was the opulence, they can go to Vaikuntha, you know, or become demigods. But in Dwarka, what really attracts the devotees who live in Dwarka is to have Krishna as their family member, the relationship. That's one primary difference between the Braja Bhakti and Dwarka Bhakti. The Dwarka devotees, they're interest in Krishna is having a relationship with him, a family relationship. That's why everybody's connected by the queens are actually married to him. Everybody got him as a cousin or an uncle. Everyone's related by blood to Krishna in Dwarka. In Vrindavan, it's the opposite. The best devotees of Krishna don't have a family relationship, and the women are leaving their families, running away from their husbands to be with Krishna. It's instead of the focus being on having a relationship with Krishna, it's just sharing that intimate ecstasy. It's based more on the rasa than on the relationship. But what the devotees in Dwarka are interested in is having a regular relationship with Krishna, and it's the relationship that gives them the pleasure, not the opulence. There's more opulence in Vrindavan anyway. Because, you know, Dwarka is not Vaikuntha. It's more like Vaikuntha than Vrindavan, but still it's a place for having an intimate relationship with Krishna.
Yeah, there's that verse.
Yes.
Kamsa by his, Krishna, Sishupal by his envy, the Pandavas by their friendship with yes. Krishna, and the Yadus by their familial relationship.
Exactly. That's what their focus was. Now, by meditating on Krishna as their family member, that was their perfection. And the Pandavas by their friendly relationship. Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura. He abandoned Mathura to found Dwarka. But then he left Dwarka to go visit the Pandavas.
Just hearing you talk, I never heard this point before about Dwarka, that the important thing is to have the relationship with Krishna. How do we distinguish then between Mathura and Dwarka? Because yeah. Rupa Goswami talks about Krishna being perfect in Dwarka and more perfect in Mathura and more perfect in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
So what is the special feature in Mathura?
Mathura and Dwarka Dwarka is considered like a district or a sub-district of Mathura. You know, there's Vrindavan and then there's Mathura and then part of Mathura is Dwarka. That's the one way of looking at it. So it's the same thing. It's the same devotees. Krishna took all the Mathuravasis, took them all to Dwarka. So it's the same basic relationships because it's the same people. It's just that in Dwarka, Krishna really, shows his power. He gets married in Dwarka. He's still a bachelor. He doesn't have any wife in Mathura. So he's, the relationships are getting established in Mathura. But Krishna doesn't really show all of his, start fighting with all the demons and get married to 16,000 queens and display all his opulence until he gets to Dwarka. So it's more intimate. In Mathura. But more exact systematic explanation I can't give you. I don't know it that well. Uddhava had his relationship with Krishna in Mathura first. It was from Mathura that Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, not from Dwarka. They were living in Mathura when Krishna sent Uddhava with the message to the Vrijavasis. Yeah. If you read it, if you read the chapters, it's in chapter 46 and 47, Krishna's still in Mathura.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. He gives the example like fish in the water. They see the moon coming through, you know, the image of the moon in the water. Now the water's translucent, so you can see them. If you're in the water, you look up, you can see the moon, but you don't know what it is. Fish cannot recognize what the moon is. They don't even know that there's a sky. They think all there is water. Like that, Uddhava is thinking that we, Yadus, we had Krishna with us, but we had no idea what he was. But that's just his ecstasy to think like that. Yeah, in the material world it breeds contempt, but in the spiritual world it's all under the control of Yogamaya. So Yogamaya arranges for the pure devotees to forget that Krishna is God, but that improves the spiritual life. It's not something that, you know, deludes them and causes them trouble. You know, if we become contemptuous of Krishna, we're in trouble. But Mother Yashoda, you know, not being able to admit that Krishna is God, she's not contemptuous. Her love is unexcelled. But in our material condition, we get the association of our spiritual master, and we're privileged to, you know, have given his personal service, and then we become contemptuous because of our material conditioning. That's where the principle of familiarity with contempt applies. We get the association of pure devotees and we commit offenses because we become over familiar. But in the spiritual world that doesn't happen.
But
when under the influence of Yogamaya, that's the perfection. That's intimate love. Can only begin when we start to forget that Krishna's God. If we remember Krishna's God, then we're afraid to get close to him. So Yogamaya arranges for us to forget that, you know, what he really is. But that doesn't breed contempt, that breeds intimate love. Okay. So anyway, Uddhava is expressing it beyond this several other misconceptions because of his ecstasy. His divyon mad, his rational, he's the old advisor of Krishna who's supposed to be able to figure everything out. He can give advice to the Supreme Personality of God, so you can imagine how intelligent he must have been. But in this ecstasy, his intelligence is breaking down and he's saying so many ridiculous things. It talks about he mentions the demigods. We're up to verse 13. That they saw Krishna, the demigods and great kings and sages and the general populace, they were all present at the Rajasuya sacrifice, and they all saw Krishna there being worshipped as the leader of the assembly. They saw Krishna kill Shishupal. But Uddhava says they just thought that he was the best creation of Brahma. They couldn't appreciate his transcendental position. Also not exactly true. Many demigods knew who Krishna was, at least theoretically. Yes? Yeah, let's go back to that, yes. Which one?
In verse 11.
Yeah, what's the word? but not having performed the required penance. Atapta tapasam. Yeah. Usually, if you want to see the absolute truth, you have to undergo severe sadhana, and it's usually described as tapas. The word tapas doesn't necessarily just mean pain. You know, causing yourself pain. It comes from the word tap, the verb tap, which means to burn, but it also means in the intense concentration of heat. Like the sun, tapati. The sun is generating intense heat. That's called tapas. When a yogi concentrates very intensely in meditation, that's called tapas. So the essence of tapas is not pain. It's concentration and intense endeavor. So yogis endeavor over thousands of years, many lifetimes, to see the absolute truth. They're practicing various kinds of tapas. But here, these yadus, who never did any tapas, you know, never practiced yoga, never did any real sadhana, they had the opportunity to see Krishna all the time. The yogis are struggling to get a glimpse, and they've got Krishna with them day after day. So, how unfortunate. They had the opportunity, Krishna came, and now he's gone away. And they didn't take advantage. So he's lamenting like that. And then he mentions, in passing, the damsels of Raja, the gopis, how they enjoyed pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, the rasa dance and other loving, intimate exchanges with Krishna. And then when Krishna left them, they were plunged into torment. They sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Practically, they were on the verge of death. They didn't bother to eat. They didn't bother to do anything. They just wanted to leave their bodies when Krishna left them. Buddha was pointing out the disastrous condition that they were plunged into by Krishna's leaving them. But actually, when Uddhava visited Vrindavan after Krishna had left for Dwarka, for Mathura, he saw for himself the actual condition of the gopis and how the ecstasy that they were feeling, the intimacy of love for Krishna that they were manifesting, was so exalted that he could only hope to be able somehow to follow in their footsteps. He became, you know, an admirer and follower of the gopis from that point on, Uddhava. And he's speaking, he already has had that experience. So when he's talking about how unfortunate the gopis were and how Krishna cheated them, again, this is can't be taken literally. It's quite contrary to Uddhava's own understanding, that actually the gopis are the most fortunate. And that he could only hope that he could get a drop of the ecstasy that they experience, the kind of love that they have for Krishna. But only mentions them once here, this one verse. In this section, he doesn't start describing the gopis in elaborate detail. It would cause too much disturbance at this point. He talks about how Krishna appeared in this world, because the devotees and demons were in conflict with one another. The unborn Supreme Lord took his birth just like fire appearing in wood. And he says, it causes me great distress to see how this unborn Supreme Lord pretended to take birth in Vasudeva's home, in the prison of Kamsa, in a distressful condition. How his father had to take him away and hide him in Gokula. How then later, when Jarasandha was attacking Mathura, he had to run away and take shelter in the ocean and build the fortress Dwarka. It bewilders and distresses him, he says, to think how the supreme unborn lord has to undergo all this tribulation and embarrassment. Again, this is his ecstasy. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. And then how Krishna, when he met Vasudeva and Devaki after killing Kamsa, he and Balaram fell at their feet and apologized that, you know, you didn't have the opportunity, we weren't able to serve you during our childhood. You know, please excuse us. This again causes, gives me pain at heart, Uddhava says, to remember this. And then he talks about the demons. He mentions Shishupal first. How fortunate they are. Shishupal was able to see Krishna at the time of death. I'm not going to be able to. Krishna's sending me away. I'm going to be stuck up there in the snow in Bhadarak Ashram. Krishna's going to be back in Goloka. I won't be able to see him when I leave my body. But demons like Shishupal were killed by Krishna personally because they saw Krishna face to face at the moment of death. There must be better devotees than all of us Yadus. The demons must be the real devotees. Now he's really talking contradictory. I consider, this is verse 24, I consider the demons who are inimical to the Lord to be more than the devotees. Because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord carried on the shoulders of Garuda, the son of Tarksha, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand. Then Uddhava starts, this is his impressions, his general impressions about how he's bewildered and distressed to remember Krishna. Yeah. And he mentions various topics from Krishna's pastimes. Now he's going to go into a chronological description. In the commentary, taking from the notes of Jiva Goswami, Prabhupada mentions the reason why Uddhava does this, now goes into a two-chapter long chronological recollection of Krishna's pastimes from his birth on, is that he doesn't want to talk about Krishna's disappearance. He figures he can postpone it. He has to eventually mention it. But if he spends some time talking about everything else he did, he can put off talking about the disappearance. He'll have to, in the end, he'll have to mention it. So we don't have this here. That's, if you want to read it, it's the rest of the second and third chapters of the third canto. Uddhava is remembering the pastimes of Krishna in chronological order. Any questions or comments? Yes.
These are all this
contradictory talk. This is symptomatic of viraha bhava. You can see in the gopis also when they're in separation from Krishna, they're saying so many absurd things. Yes.
And the nature of this kind of humility that comes out of Rahabhava.
That you think yourself the most unfortunate when you're actually the most fortunate. Yes. That's the nature of it. That's the nature of actual dainyam. Mm-hmm. Dainyam means wretchedness, literally. So you think that you're a completely unfortunate, useless person when actually you're the most useful person. Okay. Well, I don't know if I'm competent to do that, but he's trying to follow in their footsteps. You know, the actual Mahabhava is only found in Srimati Radharani and a few of her associates. Yeah, and fortunate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can also rise to Mahabhava. Uddhava is following the footsteps of that. You know, he's not actually all the way up on that high, that same level, but he's approaching it. But you know, how to exactly analyze, I can't. I'm incompetent. He's very competent to understand from the viewpoint of an onlooker, the ecstasy of the gopis. Just like Shukadev Goswami, similar. He is the most qualified person to speak Srimad Bhagavatam because he can describe the intimate ecstasies of devotees like the gopis of Vrindavan. But he's not himself in Madhurya Rasa. Now, he's not on their level, But he's got a special competency to understand and describe their ecstasy. And same thing with Uddhava. That's why Krishna sent him, left him behind as a preacher. Someone who can understand the highest levels of devotional service, even though he's not himself a participant. You know, it takes a special skill. Shukadeva is a gyani, an old Brahmavadi. You know, he began his life as a gyani. And then he got converted to a devotee. Uddhava began as his disciple, as another gyani, disciple of Brihaspati. Yeah, big scholar. So these gyanis, when they get converted to devotees, they become very competent preachers. You know, the primary preacher of the Bhagavatam, he was a gyani. Maitreya Muni was a gyani, and he became the speaker of the Bhagavatam to Vidura. So it's a special talent that's used for, you know, to make someone especially competent to be a speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Uddhava is also in that category. He's also a very well-trained scholar.
But these are all Nitya Siddha devotees who are simply taking that role to show the power of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So what was it that changed Uddhava? Like you say, he was initially a gyani. How did he become a devotee?
Can I withhold that? I know the answer because I read it, but maybe we'll wait a few days. You can guess it, but let me not say it now. There's special sadhana that Uddhava practiced that made him what he was that I won't say right now.
I wanted to ask how could he have become a disciple of Brihaspati? Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the demigods. Are we to understand that Uddhava went to the heavenly planets?
Anybody know? I don't know. I don't know the history of that. Because he was born on the earth. That we know. We're told that he was born in the middle part of India. Maybe perhaps, but
previous life he was a disciple of
Brihaspati. No, no, this life. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the two of them came together. Maybe we can find out somewhere. All that tells us in the Bhagavatam is that he was his disciple. We don't get the history of it, details.
Yeah.
It doesn't even tell us what he studied, although we do get one hint that he studied, one thing he did study was astrology.
He described one of his disciples, he was one devotee, he was a sannyasi, Prabhupada said, you can, like,
okay. Because that's what Brihaspati means. Brihas is the Vedas. So the lord of the Vedic hymns, the person who's the expert in reciting Vedas, he's Brihaspati. Okay. We have a passage of Brihad Bhagavatamrita to read. I'm sorry I couldn't give it, I can't give it to you printed out, but we'll read it. Now this is from the first part. We were reading yesterday from the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the story of Gopakumar. This is the first part. This is the story of Narada's travels. He's traveling throughout the universe looking for who's really the best devotee of Krishna, who has the most of Krishna's mercy. And he's already, in chapter 5, he's already has come up to Dwarka. And he's met the Yadus. Because, who was it? He went and visited demigods, and he was sent to Hanuman. No, he went to Prahlad first. And Prahlad told him, yes, but I'm not really Krishna's greatest devotee, because I'm only practicing passive devotional service. I remember Krishna, but I don't have a real personal relationship with him. He came, and I saw him when he came to kill my father, and then he disappeared. I don't have an ongoing relationship or active service relationship. You should go see Hanuman. He served Lord Ramachandra for 33,000 years, and now he's serving him in separation. That's a real servant. But Hanuman sent Narada. He said, I've got my service, but do you know who are better servants than me or the Pandavas? So Hanuman sent Narada to the Pandavas. The Pandavas sent Narada. Said, you go to Dwarka and you see the Yadus. Yeah. Krishna comes to visit us once in a while, but he lives in Dwarka all the time. And the Yadavas have actual intimate relationship with Krishna. So here Narada is visiting the Yadus. And it's funny, all the other previous devotees denied or rebuked Narada for praising them. You know, what do you mean I'm the greatest devotee? You know, I'm no devotee at all. And everybody, Indra and Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Hanuman and Prahlad, they all refused to accept Narada's praise. But when he got to the Yadus, when Narada came to visit Dwarka and met the Yadus, they said, yes, Krishna is so wonderful that by his grace, even we can become his intimate servants. They had said, yes, Narada, everything we know, Narada, you're the greatest sage, everything you say must be true. So they didn't deny the praise. They just explained it away, that it's just Krishna's mercy. And now they're saying, yes, we have to admit you're right. We have Krishna's great fortune to be his intimate friends and family members. But you know, among all of us, there's one devotee who's better than the rest of us. So I'm reading now from, they are describing this. This is chapter 5 of the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, starting from verse 116. Okay, I won't have time to read the Sanskrit verses. Yadus, I guess it's Ugrasen actually speaking here. He's the spokesman for the Yadus. But among us, blessed Uddhava has received Krishna's greatest mercy, they tell Narada. That exalted soul is Lord Yadavendra's advisor, his disciple, his servant, and his extremely dear friend. And a commentary by Sanatana Goswami on this verse. Out of respect for Narada, the Yadavas feel obliged to put aside their doubts and accept his words as true. This is greater humility. Rather than denying telling Narada, no, I'm not the greatest devotee. Higher humility is to accept it. Yeah. Out of respect for Narada, they feel obliged to accept his words as true. Ultimately, they cannot deny their own glories because those glories are all inseparably related to Krishna. All the Yadavas can do is try to minimize those glories by presenting the greater glories of a better devotee, Sriman Uddhava. When the Yadava princes sit in the royal assembly of Dwarka, they are accustomed to deliberating with Krishna on various important matters of state. But none of the Yadavas can consider himself as valuable an advisor as Uddhava. The next verse. Sometimes the Lord abandons us to go on a journey. This gives us such distress that even when we see him again, the pain does not go away. We cannot be sure when he might go away somewhere else. But Uddhava is always by his side, serving Lord Krishna, his master, and residing with him. Sometimes the Lord, the personality of Godhead, sends Uddhava on missions on which the Lord himself should go. For example, the Lord sent him, Uddhava, to gain the release of Samba, whom the Kauravas had taken captive. That's described in the Bhagavatam. Commentary. Krishna sent Uddhava on various missions to Gokula, to Hastinapur, and elsewhere. When Samba, Krishna's son, tried to elope with Duryodhana's daughter, the Kaurava army, headed by Bhishma and Duryodhana, captured Samba, and Uddhava was instrumental in arranging Samba's release. Narada avoids mentioning the journey to Vraja that Uddhava undertook for Krishna because it is too confidential to discuss in the open assembly at Dwarka. Uddhava enjoyed Krishna's association constantly, but when sent out to either rescue or console the Lord's dear devotees, Uddhava felt more satisfaction than by staying with Krishna. Okay, next verse. Uddhava stays alone with Krishna when the Lord playfully enjoys his meals. So he is the only person who can always attain the Lord's Mahaprasad Vrindams. With great pleasure, Uddhava massages his master's lotus feet and then happily falls asleep with the Lord's feet on his lap. When the Lord goes out for confidential pleasures, Uddhava sometimes goes with him. And when Uddhava serves as the Lord's minister in the assembly hall, his precious gems of advice and his flood of witty and charming comments can earn abundant praise from Lord Srihari. They also delight all of us and fulfill all of our desires. Commentary: when Krishna visited Kubja, Uddhava accompanied him. Oh, I forgot. Please sign the attendance sheet. So just check. If you're here, check it. If you're not here, don't check it. And there's two columns, signed for yesterday and for today. Just check it. Okay, next text. What can be said of Uddhava's continuous good fortune? Since childhood, he has been so absorbed in the taste of serving his master's lotus feet that foolish people call him a madman. Commentary: Vatula, the word in the verse, means insane, or in more exact medical terms, suffering mentally from imbalance of the vital airs, vatas. When naive persons, without spiritual discrimination, observed Uddhava in trance, oblivious of his surroundings, or saw him babbling like someone haunted by a ghost, they would judge him such a madman. Just see how amazing is his great eagerness to surrender always at the lotus feet of Lord Madhava. He has even forgone the normal bodily features of a human birth, and instead assumed a transcendental body closely resembling that of Srihari. Uddhava is famous for looking just like Krishna. So the commentary explains it. Born as a Kshatriya in the middle of India, Uddhava should have had a light complexion. But instead, by his intense affinity for Krishna, he was born with a body almost exactly like Krishna's. So even before his birth, he was attracted to Krishna. Then they say, Uddhava's body is more beautiful even than Sri Pradyumna's. Pradyumna. Krishna, this Adiyadava is saying that Uddhava is more beautiful than Pradyumna. He looks more like Krishna than Pradyumna. And Uddhava is even more dear to Krishna than Pradyumna is. When bedecked with jewels, pearl, necklaces, yellow silk dress, forest flower garlands, Makara-shaped earrings, and other ornaments, Uddhava delights us, and we mistake him for the son of Devaki himself. No one attracts the hearts of Krishna's devotees more than Uddhava. Then a commentary on this. Seeing Uddhava arrayed like Krishna was a source of delight for the Yadavas, especially when Krishna was absent from Dwarka, and they needed relief from their pain of separation. Among the prasad ornaments, he would take the remnants from Krishna. Uddhava would receive from Krishna the Vanyasruk, was a garland strung from wild forest flowers, often long enough to touch the wearer's feet. The jewels Krishna gave to Uddhava included his own Kaustubha gem, which in Vaikuntha nobody but Lord Narayan wears. The word Adi and so on implies Krishna's sandalwood paste, his headdresses, and other ornaments Uddhava is wearing. Okay, the word.
I understand that there's more than one Kaustubha gem that Lord Narayan
can give it away and.
No, there's so many Lord Narayan.
Yeah, the Kaustubha gem expands to be with the Lord, yeah. But nobody else is supposed to wear it. Okay, the word Brantya is in the mistake, that the devotees would, by mistake, think that he was Krishna. He looked like Krishna so much. Brantya means by mistake. When the Yadavas saw Uddhava from a distance, they often thought he was Krishna. And even after they realized their mistake, the sight of Uddhava still pleased them. Thank you. since his exceptional beauty made them remember Krishna's beauty. A second possible meaning of Bhrantya, same word, can also mean moving about. Uddhava was always passing here and there on Krishna's business, giving the Dwarka residents many opportunities to see him. Okay, so that's what we'll read today. This is Sanatana Goswami's depiction of Uddhava. We get some insight, even some things that we don't hear from the Bhagavatam about who this person is. Any questions or comments?
I'm a little shocked to hear that Uddhava, who is just simply Krishna's friend, could be more dear to him than
his son.
Yajna, who is his own son. Seems like a father should have more, you know, love for his son than for...
He should, but... Anyway, that's the opinion of the Yadus. Maybe it's not exactly true either. Maybe they're just exaggerating. They're different kinds of relationships. Yeah, this is a poetic trick, you know, because actually, you know, they're comparing apples and oranges. They're two different things. But there is, you know, actually parental vatsalya rasa is a one-way thing. The relationship of the son to the father is not vatsalya rasa, it's servitude usually. Yeah. And they're both in servitude, actually. Yeah. The sons of Krishna and his messengers and servants are also, and advisors are all in servitude. Different kinds of servitude. Generally, the son is the most intimate devotee in Dasya Ras, the actual sons of the Lord. Also, Pradyumna is God, he's not a jiva. He's Vishnu Tattva. So, I mean, literally, Uddhava can't be equal to him. He's not God. It's poetic description. Elsewhere, Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto that nobody's as dear as to me as you, Uddhava, not even the goddess of fortune, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Sankarsana, even Balaram, is not as dear to me as you, Uddhava. So Krishna says that much. You take it however you want, but that's what Krishna told Uddhava. Something else? Okay, so we can stop. Thank you, all glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.